I'm wanting to get a little insight into the world of Michael Jordan as it is today. So, Michael, handing over to you.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Bronwyn.
Let's talk a bit about how you're looking at the landscape. One thing we know for sure is that it is very complex and that there are multiple challenges, but also numerous opportunities that are unfolding all the time. So for you at the moment, Michael, what is absolutely the most important thing?
Well, we're all South Africans, right? And we're proud to be South Africans. And it's great that when we will win the World Cup in rugby, but unfortunately, the challenges we face as South Africans are far more severe than that. It's unemployment and poverty. There's a lot of violence and security. And to fix all of those things, we've got to grow. So I'd say the most important thing for South Africa is to make the right decisions, maybe sometimes tough decisions, but we've got to get this economy to grow so that we can create unemployment and reduce all these societal tensions that we have.
And that's a key theme that really is emanating in so many boardrooms at the moment, the theme around creating jobs. We're not moving that needle. And we hear about all the work that the private and public sector are galvanizing and starting to do together, but it's not translating into jobs. Michael, just again, you know, with a bird's eye view, what are we getting wrong?
Well, growth is a choice. Growth isn't just something that magically happens. Companies don't just grow. If you don't take tough decisions as executive and you place bets on the table and you make trade-offs, then you grow. Now, I say it's a choice, but it's also not a secret. Is if you look at the countries in the world that are doing well, they are following clearly available guidelines on what you need to do to grow. These are things like having respect for property rights, having institutions that work really well, investing in growth-enabling initiatives like education. So we actually know what we've got to do. It's just a question of, you know, really making sure that we do those right things. Now, I have to tell you, though, Bronwyn, that I have become far more positive about the next decade than the past decade. And I do think generally we can be a little bit tough on ourselves. I'd like to think that it's perfectly possible and feasible that South Africa will grow at about 2.9% for the next decade. Now, if we do that, it's still not enough. It needs to be 4 or 5 or 6% to make big dents in unemployment, but it'll be significantly better than in the last decade, and we will be creating some jobs at least.
What is fueling your positivity? As you say, you are more positive about the coming decade than you have been about the prior decade. What underpins that positivity, Michael?
Well, first of all, you can rely on other people to do all the hard work and studies. Now, there's a particularly interesting analysis of global growth, or at least the top 20 economies in the globe, that was done by Ray Dalio, a famous hedge fund manager, someone who's done incredibly well for the people who've invested with him, but himself as well, by doing deep, deep research, understanding historical precedents. And he recently released a report that takes account more than 80 indicators in each of these countries and then compares the growth for the next decade. Now, they're the usual suspects there. India will do very well, as will do Indonesia. Interestingly, so will the UAE and Saudi Arabia. But pretty close to the top is South Africa at 2.9% for the next decade. What's also interesting out of his analysis is how the US and the UK will struggle at just over 1%. And that most of Europe will actually be at zero or even in negative territory. So the world is going to change quite dramatically in the future. Emerging markets are definitely going to outperform developed markets. And South Africa is an emerging market after all. Now, clearly, I wish we could take, you know, more of the tough decisions to grow at a higher rate. But most South Africans out there will be pretty happy if we can do 2.9% on average for the next decade. It's going to be a good place to be.
You've almost answered my next question, which was how South Africa tallies up against other emerging markets. You believe we're going to hold our own?
The world is easternizing power, and economic power is moving to the east. So that's where you're going to see the most growth, the east, the Middle East, and even, as I said, northern Africa, but you know, closer to Saudi Arabia and the UAE. We are likely to outperform the emerging markets in South America. So it's diverse. I mean, the emerging market isn't just one particular category. But once again, it all comes down to doing the right things. Now, in South Africa, for example, you've got to fix energy. Energy is just so crucial for any economy to grow. And we've come through a very bad period of load shedding, which, touch wood, you know, has much improved. A lot of that, by the way, had to do with the response of the private sector to install significant solar capacity. And while the urgency to do so has now reduced somewhat, you can still see that a lot of solar is being installed, not because it's green, but because it is the cheapest form of energy that you can get. So energy is important. And then as an export nation, we've got to get our railways and ports sorted out. And there too, I'm encouraged by what is happening. We've seen the big reforms in Home Affairs. This really is a very important part of economic activity, is, you know, getting the right skills to come to South Africa. They don't take jobs, they actually create more jobs. So one by one, we are starting to do the nice things that will make us outperform. So when you say something bullish or optimistic, it's always easy to be cynical. Cynical people come across as smarter, and optimistic people don't, but I'm nailing my colors to the mast, 2.9% for the next decade.
From a political perspective, 2024 has been a very pivotal year across the world. Almost half the world has actually gone to the polls, can you believe it, this year? And most are behind us, but we have one key election ahead of us, and that is the US. Any thoughts you'd care to share on that front?
Well, first, an innovative statement, one that was actually made by Soros, George Soros, who said, the US election is so important to the rest of the world that we should at least have a 10% vote in it. So if the rest of the world could vote 10% in the US election, it may be quite a significantly different outcome, and it would help the US to keep on playing the important global role that it plays, the so-called Pax Americana. So that's the first point. We all glued to our screens and we can't escape the US election, but it is because it's so important. The second one is that you, I think, now come to see how negative a two-party system can be, because people are essentially in these two tribes. You know, it's said that Democrats, now even just married Democrats and Republicans only Republicans, you know, this room for bipartisan middle ground is something that they seem very reluctant, or they find it hard to find. And that's a real problem. And then the third one, amongst all the electioneering and all the concerns about everything from abortion to, you know, border control, it feels to me that no one is addressing the real issue, which is the incredible debt that the U.S. is accumulating, much more than the economic growth. This year, their budget deficit will be 6%. Now, it sounds great that America grows at 3%, but it's not worth it that you spend, you know, twice that amount in debt. So, and none of the two parties seem to be able to resolve that one. And that's partly why I have this conviction that power in the world is actually quite rapidly moving from the West to the East, or at least economic power is.
So for you, obviously all eyes on the US. Are you a betting man? Would you put something out there on the table, or are you just going to let this unfold?
Are you challenging me to say who's going to win the election?
I'm trying, in a very roundabout way.
So I'll go with what the markets are saying. And it's interesting, there are the pollsters who predict what's going to happen, but there are markets, you know, people who put their money where their mouth is. So I tend to follow people who have skin in the game. And at this stage, it looks like Harris has a chance of winning the popular vote, but Trump has the better chance of then winning the electoral vote. This is another funny quirk in their system, that they haven't adjusted it for the population in the various states since foundation. So I think it's likely that we're going to have a Trump victory. And I think that'll reverberate around the world, predominantly because it creates uncertainty. It is not always clear what Donald Trump is going to do. Even he himself doesn't know sometimes, you know, when he gets up in the morning. So it's a policy uncertainty that we are going to get. Now, if you ask me for my personal views, is I just hate being in one of the two camps. I would like to debate issues individually and fact-based, whether it's abortion or gun control or globalization or tariffs. And I think that's the big pity, that regardless of who wins here, it's you've got these two camps in America. That's no good way to run a country or a company.
I want to bring it home to your investments and talk a little around Bank Zero first and how we're doing on that front.
So very well, thank you. Although it's small, it has launched with these other new banks like Discovery Bank and Time, who have spent billions and billions of rands of getting their banks up and running. Ours is a smaller enterprise funded by the founding team who haven't even been paying themselves salary. So we've really been lean and frugal. But off that low base, it's growing at about 60% a year, which makes us very happy. We're focusing particularly on the business segment of the market because we think it's underserved and they pay way too much in bank fees. So the nice thing is that in South Africa, there are no alternatives. I mean, you mustn't moan about your bank fees and not do something about it because there really are options available. And that is our goal. You can call it the democratization of finance if you want to, but put more simply, we just think that the fees are very, very high. South Africans can save billions and billions of rands a year, not just through Bank Zero. There are other options out there as well. So my message to consumers and to business people who watch is just look at the money that you can save on bank fees in South Africa. It's a lot.
Compelling proposition. Now, I do actually, and I'm disclosing that I do use Rain extensively in all of my connectivity, whether it is in the West Cape or it is in Gauteng, and it works like a dream. So, and you didn't pay me anything to do that, but I'm disclosing for the purposes of my audience. How is Rain doing? I mean, other than I've got proof of the fact that I've always got great connectivity.
Thank you, Bronwyn, and I really do appreciate that. When you start with a testimonial like that, you never know which way it's going to go. So I'm very happy it's helping you in Plet and elsewhere. It was a very different strategy where the team didn't set out to be the best mobile player necessarily, but adopted 5G as a strategy to get Wi-Fi into homes and businesses. Now, it competes with fiber. The advantage is that you don't have to dig up your pavements to lay the fiber and that it's mobile. As you say, you can take your router anywhere. It's easy to switch on. It's price competitive. And in the rest of the world, 5G is also giving fiber a go. So we're very, very happy with the performance of Rain. I don't think we've released actual customer numbers, but it is EBITDA profitable and also growing at very, very nice double digits, like these startups should do. And there are a couple of more plans in the pipeline, particularly around the mobile offer. But the real thing that has happened here is that data has become much cheaper. In fact, it has become abundant. And the core offer that Rain gives is unlimited data. Now, this is the model of the internet. When you have a Netflix subscription, it's unlimited. You can watch as much as you want. It's the same with music, whether it's Spotify or Apple Music, it's unlimited. So it's just a completely different way of looking at business. And that's the nice thing that startups can do. They start with a blank sheet of paper. They can go with first principles and you price not per gig, but you just say, you want a subscription for your house, you want unlimited Wi-Fi, and here's an affordable price of doing it. So I'm just making the point that it's wonderful to start new businesses because you don't have to be held back by the industry rules that prevailed until then. And those are the things I like to back.
And Michael, when you set yourself targets for a new business of this nature, how do you go about that forecasting and targeting?
I'm probably completely the wrong person to ask because I start dreaming immediately and, thinking of, how you take over the world, which are very different growth rates to what they would be in the traditional world. But as they say in the classics, every prize fighter has a plan until they get knocked in the face. Then you do get knocked in the face and things happen. Let's take Rain, for example. You had load shedding. That was a significant impact on the business. And then you put batteries at all these towers and then they get stolen. And then you need to make a plan to stop these, thefts from happening. So you always get knocked in the face somehow, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't stay ambitious and have these big dreams. The interesting thing, if you look at lots of companies, is how long it takes to actually become profitable. I recently saw statistics that the first McDonald's restaurant took 13 years before they opened the second one. Or in South Africa, Tacky Town was in Mossel Bay with one store for 10 years, and today it has 400. And that's where you have to have a little bit of patience and know that those high growth rates, even though they're on a small base, will eventually catapult you into becoming something meaningful.
Just a final question before I let you go. The Government of National Unity, you've already shared your optimism around the coming decade. You've looked to that 2.9% growth rate. How are you feeling about GNU as we move further and further into this partnership? Well, I suppose it's not a partnership. It's a multilateral relationship. Let me not get the wrong terminology on the start.
Look, one of the great things of democracy is that it has built-in self-correcting mechanisms. This is where it differs from autocratic movements, you know, where so it's constant feedback. And what's basically happened here is that voters have given feedback to the government and the GNU is the result, which I think occupies the middle ground for South Africa. You know, it's not an extremist government of national unity. And I contrast that exactly with what's happening in the States right now, which are these two tribes that don't speak to each other and are just at completely different ends of the ideological spectrum. Now, that's not good in the long run for a country to be that divided. So first of all, I'm just saying, I think symbolically, it's great that we've got a GNU. And then it seems that there are real things that are coming out of this GNU, things that are happening that are being delivered. And that's clearly what we need so that we can put the economy on a longer growth path. So long may it last, is what I say. And actually a testament to we in South Africa, ultimately, we don't want to fight with each other. We want to fix this country for everybody who lives in it.
Michael, thank you so much for giving me time in your diary. And I'm sure that our BizNews viewers are going to be glued to their screens as your conversation unfolds. Thank you very much. Really, really appreciate getting the view of the world from Michael Jordan.
Thank you, Bronwyn. Lovely chatting to you.